Time to talk some Stanford football, and who better than our guest who gets the up-close and personal look as the Ace Radio analyst, also quarterback the Cardinal to the 1999 Pac-10 title, Rose Bowl berth, always one of our best football talks of the season. You can follow on Twitter. The handle is at Todd Husak. Todd Husak, how is life treating you these days?
Not too bad, although Stanford football could be trending in a better direction. By the way, you said 99?
Yeah.
The 20-year anniversary of our championship season is upon us, so they're going to honor us here in a few weeks, which will be great. But, yeah, other than that, that's about the only thing positive going on right now with Stanford football. It's been a rough couple of weeks since our season opener against Northwestern.
You know, Todd, last year we had my 40th high school reunion. And there was a lot of us pinching ourselves because where does the time go? Have you had that, wow, it's been 20 years moment?
Every day. When I got three kids, an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old, and I look at them getting ready for school every day. It's like, I remember you guys were babies. And then you go back. I had dinner with a few of my buddies who were on that 99 team, and we were talking about that season. And we remember the games like yesterday, and now we're talking about it 20 years later. It'll be a lot of fun to get together with everybody. That was a special season as we were picked to finish last in the Pac-10 and got off to a rough start and then ended up going back and winning the conference for the first time in 27 years.
Wow, yeah, that's since the Plunkett era. That was
that's right.
Amazing.
Exactly right.
You know, we've had some historic streaks in sports from Cal Ripken to Brett Favre to Todd Husak calling every Cardinal game on the radio. Your streak came to an end last week. I didn't see David Shaw saying it was a factor, but why'd you miss that game?
So part of it, I've been doing the games now for 12 years. I have not missed a single call. And with three little kids and travel getting a little tougher, it is not my full-time job. I run a couple commercial real estate offices here in Palo Alto and the San Francisco Peninsula. I asked for less travel, and they accommodated me by not making me travel to Orlando, which turned out to be a good one to miss because That would have been hard to hold my tongue. That was a tough one just to listen to and watch out here. That thing was over. It was 4 minutes into the game. Stanford was down 14-0, and Stanford started the game with the ball. That's tough to do. I mean, if you really think about it, that is tough to do. And they managed to do it, and then we're down 28-0 at the end of the first. Excuse me, 28-7 at the end of the first quarter.
You know, I saw on Twitter you mentioned that trip. USC going to BYU, and that game in particular seemed like it appeared out of nowhere. You know, that's a powerhouse program in the group of six. You got to go diagonally across the country. UCF's not coming back here. Accurate to say, a game like that is risky with limited upside.
Stanford had done a home and home, so Stanford played them about 4 years ago.
Okay.
The season they went 0-12. So that time, it was great. A great decision. But you would think the position Stanford's in, schedule a home and not a home and home. Like, schedule two homes and make them travel. Like, Stanford should be, and I think the entire Pac-12, this is something we've talked about in the past, the Pac-12 with 9 conference games, the conference is guaranteed 6 losses. Right? That's just math. With an extra conference game, the conference is guaranteed 6 more losses. Why schedule, like, it's the same weekend that Georgia is playing Arkansas State, and, you know, teams across the country are scheduling lesser teams. I personally like seeing better quality football, but if the Pac-12 is trying to get back to the championship and Final Four, which they have been out of for a few years and look to continue this year, unless Utah can make a big run, or Washington State maybe, they have to be smarter about scheduling. Like, USC has just a brutal non-conference. You know, schedule an easy win where your guys can get healthy and you can get the offense going and put up some points and some, right? Because at the end of the season, they don't remember who you played week 3. They just look at the wins and losses. And I think for the conference, it hurts them overall when they schedule. I'm all for scheduling one tough non-conference game and maybe one middle one. These teams have to schedule lesser competition so they can end the season with 8, 9, even 6 wins so they can have more teams qualify for bowl games.
You know, one thing about your Twitter account, again, you mentioned what I think is an unbelievable story. He played 2 years at East Carolina, then Washington State, and now Gardner Minshew is the Jacksonville Jaguars starting quarterback. And we know that he landed in Pullman due to just the most heart-wrenching, awful circumstances. I mean, how uplifting of a story is this?
Well, I remember talking about them last year. I do a little preseason preview, and you're looking at Washington State and the run they had, Luke Falk, and all the numbers he put up, and you got to figure they're coming to an end. That I cannot imagine a more brutal offseason where their starting quarterback, Tyler Helinski, commits suicide in the offseason, and they are left with really no starting quarterback, and Mike Leach picks that. Minshew was enrolled at Alabama to be a graduate assistant. His career was over. His playing career was over. He'd be in his second year on the Alabama staff right now, and he goes to Washington State and leads the country in passing and is now a starting quarterback in the NFL. It's an incredible story, and I think a great testament to Mike Leach and the job he does and that entire Washington State staff. And Minshew, I don't know him personally. He seems like a pretty interesting guy, and a guy certainly his teammates love him. He's a guy I'm rooting for. I want to see him do well, and it goes to show you how wild. You know, I played in the NFL for 5 years. You see so many guys that you know can play at the top level, and they get cut because there's too many guys at the position, or what, they got injured, they got nicked up in the preseason, we can't keep you around, and they get thrown to the scrap heap, and it's such a game of luck at times. And sure enough, here is Gardner Minshew going into his second week as a starting NFL quarterback and will likely look at a long-term career. Actually, a buddy of mine, the guy Jack Castle, his brother is Matt Castle, who played for 13 or 14 years in the NFL, never started a game in college. He backed up Matt Leinart at USC and had one of the longest careers of any quarterback over, you know, you go back the last 20 years. How many of those guys lasted 14 years? And so it's so much of a game of where you end up and how you play when given the opportunity. And I think Gardner Minshew has what it takes to last for a while in the NFL.
Nice work if you can get it.
Not too bad.
Talking Stanford.
Hold the clipboard. Hold the clipboard. You're 45 and you played 20 years, and all of a sudden your body feels good because you never got beat up.
That's awesome. Talking Stanford football with Todd Husak. The first game against Northwestern, KJ Costello took a shot from Ernest Brown way at the end of the half. And missed the USC game. So kind of a two-parter. KJ was in full slide. Brown brought the forearm up under his chin. So how is that not a cheap shot and an ejection? And how's Costello doing this week with a full game under his belt?
Well, you like to think KJ is fine. It's been a couple weeks, 3 weeks since the injury. How is that not an ejectable
Unbelievable.
Penalty? I have no idea. Absolutely no. We thought, and we see stuff live and we're in the booth, you know, in row 40 or 50 or whatever it is. All of us saw it live and thought, oh, man, that's a brutal hit. That's no question that's targeting and he's out of the game. And it was never a consideration on the field. They threw the 15-yard penalty. They took KJ off the field and that was it. Like, no review or no – and I don't think there's a more textbook play. Now, at times, I side with the defense because these plays are so bang-bang, and the offensive player changes his body position at the last second, and the defensive player hits him. I've seen way less called for an ejection than that play, and so I don't know how defensive players are supposed to be coached. First of all, I think that's a terrible rule because these guys train all they're guaranteed 48 games in their college career. And to take one away is, I think, brutal. That's a brutal penalty for something that is kind of a bang-bang play, and maybe there was an intent. I would argue that one had some intent behind it because he threw the forearm up, knocked his helmet off, knocked him out cold, and KJ missed the game as a result. That's a penalty that how they did not throw him out of the game is beyond me. And, you know, I think not that it necessarily cost Stanford the USC game because they need a lot more help than just a quarterback, but It certainly hurt their chances against USC the next week.
No, it was mind-boggling. I want to get to the Stanford defense, you know, the great tradition of corner play. Number 11, a highly touted recruit out of Texas. Incredible college debut last season. I think he led the country in passes broken up, all Pac-12. The football writers had him a second-team All-American. For folks who have not seen him much, how special is Paulson Adebo?
Well, coming into the season, he was one of the few positions that you figured Stanford locked down. They have a couple veteran players up front and Casey Tuhill, but it was really Paulson Adebo as the one lockdown corner that you figured. He was exceptional last season. He led the country, as you mentioned, led the country in pass breakups plus interceptions. He made some incredible plays on catches. Like he's a maybe Champ Bailey-type player with that change of direction, the speed. He tackles great in space. He's a complete corner. However, last week against Central Florida, he got beat twice on some double moves. I think teams went after him a little bit, knowing that he's going to be aggressive and try to make that play. Not that he got exposed, because I think he's a great player, but he can be better too. So you figure the one position at Stanford is they can take away that half of the field. Even he got lit up a little bit last week, so hopefully he can come back. They're going to need a full defensive team effort against the Ducks, who are coming in rolling after a big performance last week.
A couple final thoughts for Todd Husak, radio analyst for Stanford. I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about the man who threw more touchdowns at Stanford than anyone, back-to-back Heisman runner-up, two major bowls. What was your reaction when you heard fellow Cardinal quarterback Andrew Luck had to retire from the NFL?
Sadness was my initial reaction. I got to know him a little bit during his time on campus. He is one of the best football players I've ever, like top five football players I've ever seen. Just pure, like great, like almost prototype. If you had to build a player from scratch, you would probably build Andrew Luck from Peyton Manning's mental aspect and his approach to the game, his leadership ability. How I will never forget, they interviewed Reggie Wayne like 2 weeks into Andrew Luck's first training camp. And he's like, man, I've played with two Hall of Famers in my career, with Peyton Manning and now Andrew Luck. I mean, that's the respect he got and the recognition he got right away. And it's nothing he says, it's just his approach. By the way, he ran the same 40 and had the same vertical as Cam Newton. So Andrew was a pretty exceptional athlete, too. I loved watching him play. I mean, selfishly, I loved the way he played the game. I was a huge fan of his. I don't own many NFL jerseys. Phil Simms was my guy growing up, so I have a Phil Simms jersey. And I have an Andrew Luck jersey. And when he retired, like, I was a Colts fan. My son, who's now 8, has an Andrew Luck jersey. So I was disappointed. I get it. I totally get it. I'm sure it had to be crushing for him to miss a full season. My take on it was he was probably looking at sitting again on the IR, and that's just something he wasn't willing. Like he didn't want to do that. He's 29 years old. He's made plenty of money. He has a kid on the way. He's married. You know, he's looking at the next 40 years and not the next 3, and saying, "How do I want to do this?" And my body hurts. And I mean, it's the game has changed since I played, where you had, even when I played 20 years ago, the outside linebackers were 240 pounds and ran 4.6s and hit you and you felt it. Now the linebackers are 275 running 4.4s. Like it's a different game, and these guys are more banged up than I think they ever have been, and it's going to continue to be a problem. It's a morbid thing to say, but somebody's going to get seriously, seriously hurt on the field, and maybe even worse than that. And I think the game of football is going to have to figure out a way to address this going forward. Like I see the NFL having games on Thursday when these guys play on Sunday, that's irresponsible. I think if they want Thursday games, the teams have to have a bye on Sunday so these guys have a chance to let their bodies recover. Like you're not going 9 to 5 and you're rolling out of bed. Like these guys play a physical game that takes its toll, and it's disappointing to see the NFL not necessarily take steps that they could to protect them. And we've seen Ben Roethlisberger and Drew Brees, and now Cam Newton's injured, and you know, how are they going to continue to protect these guys as the game gets bigger, stronger, faster every year?
No, not only are they not protecting them, they're also in an element of denial. But before I ask you the last question, I mean, you just threw Phil Sims in there. You probably don't know. I'm born and raised in North Jersey. I grew up in Section 126 of the old Meadowlands.
All right.
And saw Tarkenton. My first NFL game was Tarkenton, quarterback for the Giants. So you say Phil Sims, all I think of is the Super Bowl against Denver, 22 of 25 with three touchdowns.
That's right. My man. So my family is from New York. My grandfather was a New York City cop. My other grandparents grew up, they raised my dad in Auburn in upstate, and both my parents went to Cortland State.
Whoa.
So
nice.
Yeah, exactly. SUNY. So my grandmother was a big Giants fan, and I was close to her, and she would send me Giants gear, and we would watch the games, and Phil Sims was my guy. Those Giants teams with Bavaro and McConkey and Otis Anderson and Dave Meggett. And that defense was about as good as it gets. So those were good years.
Great memories. I want to get to the Cardinal offensive line. Obviously, a terrific reputation. Kevin Carberry's group took a hit. You lose Jesse Burkett, A.T. Hall, Nate Herbig. I know Walker Little remains as the anchor, and Devery Hamilton has played a lot of ball. How would you evaluate what you're seeing up front with this line so far in 2019?
It's been a tough start. So Walker Little got injured. He's out for the year, and he was the All-American candidate. He is he was projected preseason to be, you know, first-team All-American, top 10 pick in the draft. He injured his leg. He's out for the season. Their other big tackle, Foster Sorrell, has missed. He probably missed the next few weeks. Stanford starting two true freshmen last week. One of those true freshmen got hurt and is out for a while. So.
Yikes.
Kevin Carberry is going deep into the roster to try to find guys to patch this thing together. And you're right, their reputation over the last 10 years has been a group of maulers that controls the line of scrimmage, and it hasn't been the case late last year and so far this year, where they're averaging about 3.5 yards a carry. They're giving up pressures on the quarterback. They have to find a way, and they can do it with play calling a little bit to try to protect these guys. But the good news is I think they're talented, they're young, they have some talent. They need to figure out a way to try to protect the quarterback, get some run game going, because that Oregon front will be tough and aggressive and will put pressure on those guys to play well. So we'll see. Stanford's going to have its work cut out for them. Not fun to look up and see Stanford as 10.5-point dogs at home
right,
against a Duck team that they beat last year.
Yeah, certainly not something we're used to. Folks, he's Todd Husak. On Twitter, the handle's at Todd Husak. He starts a new streak alongside Scott Reese on the Cardinals.
Eli Manning, I took one game off.
Yeah, you got to be careful you don't get Wally Pipped and Lou Gehrig
exactly steps
in. Hey, Todd, always appreciate your time and insight. Have a great broadcast, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Anytime. Great job.
All right, take it easy.